So we're in the middle of Mishlei Perek Vav, and we talked last time that we had done these psukim there, that we kind of switched metaphors a little bit. Shlomo's been talking about be careful about these foreign strange women. You should only stay with the woman you know. Taking that as a metaphor for Torah and foreign wisdom, foreign cultures. What do you learn? But the change here is it starts in Pasuk Chaf. Zion. Person hold fire on his chest and his clothes not be burned. Can you walk on coals and not burn your feet? Obviously, no. So that's a metaphor for Cain Habal Ishat. So too is one who commits adultery. It's like playing with fire. Anyone who touches it will not be unpunished, will not be considered innocent. We talk about that, the idea that it's not just a strange woman, but it's a woman who's married to someone else in this metaphor. And then talking about that with their other culture, right? This is the wisdom of them, the others. And they have their own people who learn them, right? That's the husband there. And that we talked before that it's the metaphor of it's like fire, because fire is a useful thing. You have to be careful not to be burned, and that we have to be willing to learn from other cultures, but not get too close. That's the model of the adultery there, right? We have the Torah, we can look at others. And we talked about Rav Lichtenstein talking about that. There are things that we can learn from other cultures, but we just can't get too close. And this is Rav Lichtenstein from Leaves of Faith. About synthesis. And what he said was, let's make it a little bit bigger. We should not be deterred by the illusion that we can find everything we need within our own tradition. As Arlo insisted, we must seek the best that has been thought and said in the world. And if many areas, much of the best is of foreign origin, we should expand the horizons rather than exclude it. Accept the truth, the Rambam urged, from whoever states it. Here, close that. Following the precept and practice of Rabbi Bachya, he adhered to that course himself, and we'd be wise to emulate him. Again, we can learn from other cultures. And the explicitly systematic discussion of Gentile thinkers often revealed to us the hidden wealth implicit in our own writings. Gentiles, furthermore, have their own wisdom, even of a moral and a philosophic nature. Right? We can learn morality, even the stuff that comes out of Mishlei, that's saying, well, be careful with the Torah, we can learn from other cultures. We can fail, but who can fail to be inspired by the ethical idealism, Plato, or the passionate fervor of Augustine, and the visionary grandeur of Milton? Who can remain enlightened by the lucidity of Aristotle, the profundity of Shakespeare, or the incisiveness of Newman? We might have talked about Newman as being a Catholic theologian of the 19th century. There's Chochma Bagoyim, Gemara says. We ignore it at our loss. Many of the issues that we're considering have a long Christian history, going back to Tertullian, one of the church fathers, second century, and beyond. To deny that many fields have been better cultivated by non-Jewish than by Jewish writers to be stubbornly and unnecessarily chauvinistic. There's nothing on medieval poetry to rival Dante, and nothing in our modern literature to compare with Kant. And we'd do well to admit it. We have our own genius, and we have bent it to the noblest of pursuits of the development of Torah, but we cannot be expected to do everything. That's what I've Lichtenstein. Hold that thought. And I'm not saying that Shlomo was saying not to do that. But realize that that's, in the metaphor of Mishlei, that's somebody else's wife. Right? And that holding such a thing in and getting too close, you're going to end up being burned. So Shlomo continues. I'll see what I'm there with it. Lo yavozu leganav ki yignov. Here's another thought. People don't despise thieves. Don't think badly of thieves. The malei nafsho ki ra'av, who satisfies his own life when he's hungry. Nimsa yishalem shivatayim. If he's found, he may to pay back shivatayim in the sense sevenfold, in the sense of a lot. He has to pay back. He may need to give pay back all of his property, all of the wealth of his house. But that's so, being a thief is not so bad. People understand that you're hungry. Well, no, if he's shab, committing adultery, chasalev, is only by stupid people. There's no need for it. Mashchit nafsho, hu, someone who does such a thing will destroy his own soul. And that, you know, better to, rather, adultery is worse than theft. That's illegal, but it's understandable. We're not going to be lavozi like enough. You're not going to despise someone. You're not going to make mock someone who commits theft, and you can pay it back. Can't undo the adultery. That's Rashi in this metaphor. The thief steals something. It's not as bad as the adulterer. Lama, why? He's doing it because he's hungry. We understand that. Maybe he doesn't have anything to eat. If it's found, can pay it back. You can pay back theft, but chashlumin, pay it back. And even if you have to pay back sevenfold, well, Martin, this idea of seven times, you've seen that. Chashlumin kefal harbe, many times over. You can still pay back. You can undo the damage of theft. And even if you have to sell everything you own, I'll zeb, because this, takana. You can fix the sin, machman, and you've done it because of hunger, so it's not as bad as adultery. But I think there's another side of that. If we're taking in the metaphor, that Shlomo was saying is that theft is better than adultery, in the sense of learning from other cultures. Okay, we all know the famous quote that immature poets imitate, mature poets steal. Anyway, Steve Jobs put it that good artists borrow, great artists steal. You take the ideas and make them your own. That's the idea of stealing. Okay, if you want to learn things from other cultures, as Rav Lichtenstein says, steal them. Make them your own. Don't be there. Don't go convert to the other. Don't become Greek just because Aristotle has something to teach you. Learn it and bring it to your own. Make it yours. We quoted Rav Kook before. This is talking about to these other ideas. In general, this important rule in the struggle of ideas. We should not immediately refute any idea which comes to contradict anything in Torah. Rather, we should build the palace of Torah above it. In so doing, we exalted by the Torah, and through this exaltation, the idea is revealed, and thereafter, when we're not pressured by anything, we can confidently also struggle against it. Build those ideas into Torah. Right? Be the thief, not the adulterer. And then he continues on, sort of going into more detail about this metaphor of adultery as a way of learning from the Isha, the Chachma Zara, wisdom of other nations. No, if Isha Chasar, someone who commits adultery is stupid, is missing as a empty, as a lacking heart. Mashchit nafsho hu yasena, he destroys his own soul. We quoted that. Nega b'kelion say he will find plagues and destruction. And his shame will never be erased. Because the man's jealousy, or the anger of his jealousy, burns. And the man will never forgive when he takes revenge. Well, you say kofer, he will not suffer any kind of kapara, any kind of atonement. You commit adultery, there's the gever. The man will not allow you to commit to do teshuva. Liyavek, won't desire, no matter how much bribery you offer. You'll be punished. So the question is, what does this mean in terms of the metaphor? Okay, so if you're looking at adultery, yes, the betrayed husband is going to be upset and it's going to attack you. Don't do that. But in this metaphor, the betrayed husband here is the other cultures, right, that are learning their wisdom, and they're not going to be jealous. They'd be happy the Jews learn it also, right? I guess you could worry about cultural appropriation, but I don't think that's a real thing. So Rashi takes it the other way around. This gever here, the one who's upset, isn't the husband of the far other woman, it's the father-in-law of your real wife. If you're supposed to be studying the Torah, then it's Hashem who's going to be upset. who's going to be Kinat Hamas, who's going to be burning with jealousy and will not forgive. With Kinah, with Kanebo, Vifarabo, like this, the man will be jealous and take payment back. Hamatosha Kosh Baruch Hu. This is the anger of God. Tugibor al kol, that is powerful, more powerful than anything and all others. Liyachmol biyom nekamim, will not have pity when God takes his vengeance. So it's God's going to big revenge. If you don't study Torah, you betray it by learning these other chachamot. So stay faithful. That's the lesson here. Learn Torah. So the next parak, Parak Zion, here, expands this idea of the Torah as the lover. Love Torah. That's your true, that's the one you're supposed to be faithful to. Obviously, Shlomo was using the metaphor, something that he knows about. B'nei Shemar Imri, my son, keep that which I say, mitzvotai tifatzen yitach, and treasure my mitzvot. Shemar mitzvotai v'chiyah, keep my mitzvot and you will live. Torah ti kishan einecha, guard the Torah like the pupil of your eye. Roshei malos be'echa, tie them on your ring. Yes. This model of Erastich Le'olam of wrapping around the finger of the ring. Kotvem al luach libecha, write them on the tablets of your heart. Sounds like tefillin here. Amor lachachma achotiat. Tell wisdom, you are my sister. Medele bina tikra, and call bina understanding, your intimate friend. And this idea of amor lachachma achotiat. Calling the sister. Now he's not calling the. Now, the point to realize that in Tanakh, that is a specific idiom. He's not using it as a metaphor. But that we see that, especially Shir Hashirim, the idea of Achot as the sister, as in as the close beloved. Shir Hashirim says that, Maya fu dadecha achoti kala, your breasts are lovely, my sister, my bride. And again, there's no hint of incest here. That's just a term for the beloved, close to. And similarly, also with Shira. Shira, but to the Gani Achoti Kala, come to my garden, oh my sister, my bride. Ariti Mariam Basami, I perfumed myself with myrrh and perfumes. Achalti Yarim Divshi, I've consumed the honey and honeycomb. Shtidi Yinim Chalavi, I've drunk my wine and my milk. And so that idea of Achot as meaning the close, the beloved, may be part of what's going on when we see the avot calling their wives achot. Avram calls Sarah achotihi. We see that Bereshit Imri na achoti at. Say that you are my achot. Mani tali barorech. Avram says, "Well, I don't want them to kill me." So that this is an interesting article talking about the patriarchs' wives as sisters. I don't think it's quite right, but at least talks about this idiom of achot, meaning the beloved. But the patriarchs were willing to pass off their wives as their sisters for this purpose of trying to save their lives, as posed a difficult exegetical problem for biblical commentators, almost since commentaries were first written. In 1963, major new light was brought to the question. In a scholarly article by one of the world's greatest authorities on ancient Near Eastern texts, E.A. Speiser at the University of Pennsylvania. These views received a major popular airing in Spicer's best-selling commentary for Genesis for the Anchor Bible series. Anyone has looked at commentary on the Bible, it's sort of the academic commentary. Anchor Bible is like the is the store, place where you start. At Mitch Wolf, when he's doing this Tanakh Shir, would bring the Anchor Bible
Um.
in. But Spicer based his insights on some cuneiform tablets he was studying from the famous Library of Nuzi. Ancient city in Iraq, which thrived at the time of the patriarchs. Nuzi itself was one of the two cultural centers of the Hurrian ethnic area. The other was Haran, where Abram lived after leaving Ur and before coming to Canaan. Of course, Haran and Nuzi were part of the same ethnic and cultural milieu. They're both centers of a Hurrian society of Hur. It is often thought that Nuzi's social customs and laws can shed important background light on the age of the patriarchs. So you see what the way they use it there in the Nuzi library may be relevant to the Avot. The crucial factor, Spicer, was that the same girl was given in marriage as a wife in this first tablet. He found two marriage tablet certificates, ktubot, that had this exact same names from the same time period, but they're in two different tablets. It's called the wife in the first tablet, but they use the term for sister in the second tablet. From this, it follows, according to Spicer, the wife could have simultaneously the status of sister. In other words, she could be wife and sister at the same time. Moreover, the fact that a separate sistership document was deemed necessary in addition to the usual marriage kind of points up the husband's concurrent status as brother. So somebody calling that was that you could call someone a wife, but even closer than a wife, because marriage was could be an economic thing. And they have a husband and wife who actually love each other, got the term ach and achot in these newsy documents. Is that relevant? Maybe. For Abraham, clearly it's not the whole thing, because he's arguing that in fact Sarah is not married to him, so he doesn't get killed by Paro by saying that Sarah was his sister, right? Because he's saying that no, it's not a sister. He's like she's just it. Achot here means just a kinswoman. Yeah, oh, she's related, right? That's why Avram actually says it himself. Abraham ki amarti, I said this that she's my sister. Raki in yirat elokim makom hazeh, because I didn't think there was any fear of God here. Or gudi al dvar ishti, and if they thought I was married, they'd just kill me and take Sarah. She is my sister, really my niece. On my father's side, alachubati me, but not on my mother's side. Atili should I marry? So I'm not technically lying when I call it achot. But it adds a dimension to this story. So Shlomo is saying is that the Torah is not saying, okay, consider the Torah your sister in terms of relationship, but a true love. Same thing as a madah, an intimate relationship. You should consider the Torah as your one true love. And that's what kaloti achoti means in Tanakh. And then he goes back to the Isha Zarah, right? The other one is that women you shouldn't be dealing with. And if you treat the Torah, if you treat the Torah right, you guard the Torah, then it will shomrcha Isha Zarah, that will guard you from the strange one, from this other chachma. Minachriya, from the foreign woman, Amareach, Hechlika, Achleika, whose words are so smooth. Kibachalon beti, ba'ad anshavi nishkafti, because I stood at the window of my palace. Actually, I want to translate anshavi. Eshnabi, through the lattice, looked out through the shutters. Out at the street. Shlomo was imagining himself. I'm standing there looking out the window into the street. Avina bebanim na'ar chaser lev. And I look and I see these naive boys, these na'arim, chaser lev, who are not that smart. They're out there in the street. Avar bashuk etzel pina, and they're going out into the market next to her corner. The Isha Zara's corner, who's out there. The Derech Beit HaYetzer and walking toward her house. Neshef Be'erev Yom, at twilight, Bishon Laila, and the darkness, Vafela, and the absolute darkness. You've seen the Na'ar go there. The Peti, the one who's the naive one, the one who's easily convinced by anything. They're not going to their Achot, to the Torah, they're going to this Isha Zara. Yinei Isha Lekvato, and the woman's there calling to him, Shit Zona, placing herself like a harlot. We need Seret Lev with a set purpose. So in this image here, the narrator, Shlomo here, is looking out of the window at those other women. He's watching the Isha Zara. And he says, that's okay. We quoted Shlomo Carmi before about dealing with other cultures, other ways of looking at Torah, that we want a room with a view, since there's knowledge to be had that we want to have for an enhanced study of Torah. We cannot do our work. We cannot prepare to build a palace unless we do from a room of our own. So he's looking out. That's the way to deal with the Isha Zara. You watch it from afar. But don't go derech beita yitzah. Don't go into her house. That's too dangerous. And then someone goes into great detail about how seductive the Isha Zara is. She's got smooth words. Hemiyahiyah v'sareret. She's moved, walking around. She's circling. They tell lo yishkenu ragleha. Her feet literally don't stay at home. She's not never stay at home. She's always outside there. Pam bachutz, sometimes outside. Pam barachavot, sometimes out in the street. Bezel kopina tarav. She's lying in wait in every corner. And that's when you read it, those are the same words he talks about with the Chachmah. That if you're out there in the streets, you're looking for wisdom, you can find the Isha Zarah, you can find voice of Chachmah also. And both of them are calling out to Bataim, the easily seduced, the Na'ar Chasar. Right? We don't know who to listen to. I quote in the beginning, the first parak, we have Chachmot Bachutz Darona, that wisdom calls out in the chutz, outside, Rechavot Titein Kola, just like this Isha Zara here. Right? How do you know who you're supposed to listen to? Rosh Homiot Tikra, in the Homiya, like with a place where everyone's going, she calls out, Pitchei Sha'arim, Be'ir, Amarah Tamar, she speaks out in the gates of the city. And this is talking about the Chachmah. This is when you're supposed to listen to. So how do you know? And so what happens? Our feckless hero, our Na'ar, goes off with the wrong woman. And as Shlomo's watching, he's describing, looking out on the scene, Unashkalo, she grabs him, she kisses him. Azepanah, she brazenly, Tomar, brazenly speaks to him. Zivchei Shlomim alai. I have Shlomim sacrifices. I have Karban Shlomim at home. Ayom Shilamti Nidarai. I fulfill my vows. Al Ken Yatzati Lekotecha. That's why I'm coming out to greet you. That's what the Isha Zara is saying. Shachar Anecha, to seek your face. And I found you. You got to join me. To present yourself as from. Right? I fulfill vows. I bring Karbanot. I'm as acceptable as the Chachmah is calling you. Right? She's got a Karban Shlomim that needs to be eaten. The Salach of a Karban Shlomim. Has to be eaten within 2 days. You can't save it. And we talk about shlamim as shalom, because you have to invite guests to share it. That's the nature of shalim. So what's she supposed to do? Obviously, you need to come to my house and join the feast. Right? So in the metaphor, she has so much to offer. She can't keep it to herself. She needs the Na'ar to come to her home. So she continues speaking. Marvadim ravarati erasi. I drape my bed with curtains. Chatavot atum Mitzrayim, with, he translates that as died. Here we go. With the tapestry of Egyptian yarn, Mitzrayan yarn. Hey, nafti mishkavi, I have perfumed my bed, mor aholim v'kinamon, with myrrh, aloe, and cinnamon. Again, just like the Achoti Kala and Shir HaShirim. You can't tell the difference. Let us be sated with love until morning. Nisalab Oavim. Be full of love. Ki ein ha'ish b'beito. Because the man's not home. Getting back to this adultery image. The husband's not home. Halach b'derech merachok. He's gone far away. Tzurora kesef lakach b'yado. He's taken his purse with him. He's taken the money. Lioma kese yabo beto. He won't come until a point in time. He's not coming home. We'll be safe. So Rashi takes this ish here in this metaphor, who's not home, is referring to God also. Kadosh Baruch Hu, that this foreign wisdom says God is left. God's not present. God won't care. You can go learn me. Stick with the Avodah Zarah. That's Rashi. God's abandoned his Shekhinah, his dwelling place. Beit HaMikdash is destroyed. There's no reason to care. He's called Tov, Natan La'odei Golulim. He's given all of the goodness belongs to idol worshippers now. You need to join us. But here, I think I would read it more directly that this is actually talking about adultery, and this adulterous woman is talking about her husband who's not home. That is, Isha Zara prepared her bed, but her husband left. And in the metaphor, the wisdom of other culture exists, but they don't study it anymore. Right? What do you do? The Greeks don't learn Aristotle. The English don't read Milton. You have all this wisdom out there that Rav Lichtenstein wants us to learn, but the other cultures we're learning from don't learn it at all anymore. They've abandoned it. And this comes from an article by David Goldman, who's not a rabbi. He's a quantitative finance guy, like all these smart Jewish boys. But he writes a lot about Jewish philosophy. He writes for Chakira a lot. And he wrote a review like 2 years ago. He wrote a review of Rav Lichtenstein's article in the Jewish Forum, Judaism's Encounter with Other Cultures, Rejection or Integration. You know, Lichtenstein says we have much to learn from all these other cultures. We need to learn Milton, we need to learn Newman. Because they say things that teach us about Torah, and we need to know them. And this is what Goleman said about this. When Judaism Encounter with Other Cultures first appeared in 1998, which for us old people seems like just yesterday, but that's more than a quarter century ago, almost 30 years ago, under the editorship of J.J. Schachter, the question was, should religious Jews learn the Chachma of other cultures, Western Christian culture in particular? An additional question now arises, 25 years later. Can we learn Western culture, even if we want to? Is it out there to be learned? Now, we have far less to fear from Gentile Chachma than in the past. We also have less opportunity to learn from it. Only a generation ago, so in the 1990s even, the culture of the West with its deep Christian association still appeared as a challenge to Judaism, as Shlomo put it, right? It's called out, seductively calling out to all the good Jews. For nearly 200 years, the first rank of Jewish talent was decimated by defections to science, and he gives examples, and poetry and fiction, philosophy, music and painting, and other Gentile cultural endeavors. Jews are really good at all these other things that weren't Torah. And that was a danger then. If you learned it, you might be sucked into it. You're going to go to their house and they'll be lost to our house, to the house of the Palace of Torah. And then he talks about that Jewish Action, which is the OU magazine, published an exchange between Rav Lichtenstein and Professor William Kohlbrenner of Bar-Ilan University in its spring 2004 issue. So this was 6 years after Rav Lichtenstein published his article about the importance of learning from other cultures. Wholly in sympathy with Rav Lichtenstein's position, Kohlbrenner nonetheless warned that the hostility of modern universities to Western classics made it virtually impossible for religious students to reproduce Rav Lichtenstein's course they'd studied 2 generations earlier. So Rav Lichtenstein could go to Harvard and learn English literature. My kids cannot go to Harvard and learn English literature, because then they're at Harvard, which is just antithetical to everything that Judaism stands for. So Lichtenstein replied to Kohlbrenner, insisting that the benefits of learning Western literature justify the effort even in adverse conditions. Even advocates of Dr. Kohlbrenner's position can acknowledge that the need to keep the home fires burning and hope for better times. We in the interim can minimally only stand and wait, yearning for a fresh dawn. Even if winter is here, might we not, with inspired vision and informed counsel, anticipate the spring? To pay the price. We might and we should. In the intervening decade and a half, bringing it up to 2022, the position of Western classics in university has descended from isolation and suspicion to outright persecution and ridicule. There are no departments of English literature anymore that teach Milton or Shakespeare. They've gone woke. Harold Bloom, the critic, one who wasn't Alan Bloom, who wrote The Closing of the American Mind, Harold Bloom was a Shakespearean critic, predicted that his Western canon would all but perish at the hands of what he dubbed the School of Resentment. We're destroying all intellectual and aesthetic standards in the humanities and social sciences in the name of social justice. There are no more, again, departments of humanities, there are no more departments of social sciences that learn anything. After lifetimes spent in teaching literature at one of our major universities, I have very little confidence, and that was at Yale, I have very little confidence literary education will survive its current malaise. And as he says, that the and then Coleman concludes that the fate of Western literary classics in today's universities is anything more ignominious than Bloom imagined in his gloomiest moments. So now we come back to this. To Shlomo in this metaphor. We feel sorry for this Isha Zara. Almost. Right? This is this foreign wisdom that was learned by somebody, at least in universities, at the secular university of Baron to Aristotle, who will learn him? This Puri Shah Zahra is perfumed with our Nara, our Mar, Olim Kinamon. She's trying to make herself attractive, but her husband has abandoned her. Shlomo describes herself as a shitzana, she's putting on the harlot. She's acting like Tamar. Remember Tamar, Yehuda's daughter-in-law? Right, it says that. But you get the Tamar Lemor, she should have been married to Yehuda's son. He doesn't want to let her there. So about Tesar, big day al-Mitah, she takes up her widow's weeds. But Tchas puts on a veil, Vitalif, wraps herself up. But Tesha, she stands at the corner. Kind of like this, he shows her standing at the corner. Kiratak, he does Shayla. She saw that Shayla had grown up, lo, not lo, lo, Lishad. She's not allowed to marry him. But Yere, Yudav, he just sees her and thinks she's his own. Tamar's desperate. This Yishazana is desperate. She needs to learn something. So what does she do? So the question is, I'm not that worried about her in the metaphor of this Chochmah Zara. But what should we do? Rav Lichtenstein says, we have something to learn, but there's no one there to teach it. Do we need to be the experts now in Milton? And as Goldman continues, do we now learn Shakespeare, Milton, and Keats, even though the Christian world has stopped learning them? And if we do, who will teach us? Shall we train Jewish specialists in English poetry to teach Jewish students an art the Gentile world has almost abandoned? Shall we create our own schools of literary criticism to determine which of the pearls of Gentile poetry are worth preserving? In that case, religious Jews become the last curators of some parts of Western civilization, like Catholic monks in the Middle Ages preserving the Chachma of pagan Greece and Rome. And if the religious world were to undertake such an effort, by what criteria will we judge secular literature? And wishes that Rav Lichtenstein had given us more guidance. So we don't know what Rav Lichtenstein would have said. What do we do? We know what Shlomo says about this. Okay, this Isha Zara, whose husband has abandoned her, it doesn't matter. It's too dangerous. That side, woof. Okay. She deceives him with her words, with her smooth lips. She pushes him aside. He goes out, he being the Na'ar, who's going to go learn this with Chachma, go into her home. He goes after her suddenly, Kishor el Tevach Yabo, like an ox going to slaughter. Eches el Musar Evel, like a serpent, which is the punishment of a fool. And you flach chetz kavedo until the arrow pierces his liver. Kemaher quickly, kemaher tzipor alpach, like a bird rushing toward the trap. Will you vadak even have shahu, and he doesn't realize that it's fatal. Vatabini shimuli. So now my children, listen to me. Vakshivu im repeat, listen to what I say. Do not let your heart be drawn to her ways. Do not go astray in her path. Because she has brought down many corpses. And many strong men have been killed. Her house is the way of the grave. Your adult El Chedre Mavet going down to the room, the chambers of death. It's too dangerous. It's not worth the risk. We can live without Aristotle. We can't live without the Torah. So yes, Shlomo is saying, you can learn if it's there, but again, steal it. Don't become part of that culture. No matter how much you might have learned otherwise, let them learn it. And that's where Shlomo finishes this parak here, and we will continue on next time, continuing the virtues of on the virtues of Torah, as opposed to the Isha Zarah, the foreign wisdom.
Oh, Danny, there.